You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK.
The Punt Podcast, in association with the FWA.
Genuinely wants to spend the rest of his career at Tottenham Hotspur. I think he's mad.
I'm sorry, how can he escape Flash? It's unbelievable.
So this is an obvious snap. It's a team in great form at home against a team who just aren't that good.
I think he'll score some goals in League One in 17-10 any time. Deadly from set pieces and in the air.
Great, the boss is up for manager of the month. They've been phenomenal. They're odds against. Love it.
Subscribe to The Punt on iTunes. Listen on Audio Boom or look out for the link on Twitter or on William Hill's Facebook page.
Hello, everyone. A warm welcome along to the Punt Podcast. Good to have you with us. Is Chelsea's title defence over after just 1 week? We will ask the chief football reporter at The Sun and the presenter of the Sunday supplement on Sky Sports. Neil Ashton is our FWA representative on this podcast this week. We've also got Joe Crilly with us. He is William Hill's football PR man, also known as Footy Joe on Twitter. He'll give us the lowdown as to how William Hill fared in week one. And of course, Derek McGovern is here to look at the five live televised Premier League games. We have Pete Farries with his best bet in the Championship. We have Gav Puchlowski. He'll look at League One and story time once again with Al Ross as he delves into the action in League Two. Sam Norris is here to give us his best bet in Europe, and we've got a trivia question on the podcast this week. Derek also tells jokes, admittedly they are from a decade ago, but funny nonetheless, and hopefully he will get his first winner on the Naps table. There will be an update, of course, on this podcast later on, but we're going to flip things slightly this week, and we're starting with the betting and the five televised games, and that's coming next. Welcome along to the Punt Podcast, action-packed. It's your one-stop shop for all your football betting this weekend, and it's good to have you with us. Dave Callner here, joined by our PR man, William Hill's football PR man, also known as Footy Joe on Twitter. It's a warm welcome to Joe Crilly. Good morning to you, Joe.
Good morning.
And, of course, Derek McGovern is with us once again. Derek, not the start to the season I anticipated. I thought after last season and the horror show of last season, Derek, you were going to come out firing with winning Nap after winning Nap. It didn't quite materialise week one.
No. I was just saying, you always, whenever you have a losing run in betting, it always goes on like seven times longer than your winning run. That's just a scientific fact. But this has gone on like 1,000 times longer than the bit longest winning run I've ever had. Sometimes you just can't think you're ever going to pick a winner. It's like when you're on a confidence with the opposite sex. I remember a couple of weeks ago, a girl said yes to me, and I told her to go home and think about it. That's how far my confidence has gone. It's just vanished completely.
On that note, that's the last we're hearing about your sex life on this podcast, that's for certain, Derek. Joe, as far as week one is concerned from a William Hill perspective, we spoke with Andy Excel, the head of in-play football trading here with William Hill last week. He said he needed one or two of the top teams to miss out last week, and in the end, Liverpool only drew. Chelsea were whipped. Must have been a good start for William Hill from a bookmaking perspective.
It was indeed. On Saturday, actually, our best back selection was Chelsea at 1-4. They obviously fell by the wayside. Liverpool were the fourth best back selection. They drew. Finally, Crystal Palace were fifth best back selection, and they lost to Huddersfield. So from a bookmaking perspective, Saturday was an absolutely fantastic day. And if anybody, and I very much doubt anybody did, but if anybody backed the double of Huddersfield and Burnley, they would have got 70-1.
Wow.
Certainly not a bet that I was even or would ever dream of contemplating. But
you can be clear that nobody... Because if they did, you'd have heard them. You'd have heard all about it by now, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I'd be all over social media, yeah, definitely.
Let's get stuck into this week then, chaps. We're going to go through the five live TV games first of all. And it starts with a Swansea versus Manchester United. Swansea 9-1 to win the game. The draw 15-4 with Manchester United 1-3. As is always the case, plenty of enhanced odds offers on the William Hill website. Manchester United to win both halves could be one that attracts the punters this weekend. It was 7-4. That's been enhanced to 2-1. And if you think Lukaku is going to score in a Manchester United win, that was 21-20. That's been enhanced to 6-5. And Derek, we spoke on last week's podcast about boring Manchester United. Jose Mourinho's pragmatism last season frustrating the Manchester United fans, but that was nowhere to be seen last week. They thumped West Ham 4-0, commanding victory. Romelu Lukaku got a brace on his Premier League debut, and Manchester United will come into this match buoyant and will fully expect to hammer a couple of nails into Swansea this weekend, Derek.
Yeah, they will. I remember we were both sniffy, weren't we, last week about Man United?
We were.
And Andy. We were, you know, at best we'd expected a 1-0, a pragmatic 1-0 win or something, and they ran riot. I'm just wondering, though, whether that was Man United being back to their best, you know, but Man United in their pomp, or whether they owed an awful lot more to West Ham's ineptitude, because the Hammers were absolutely useless, still trying to bed in a few newcomers, still got a lot of injury problems. You know, I'm not sure. That's what we're going to see from Man United every week. I still think they're a shadow of the side that used to, you know, batter teams under Fergie. That said, again, Swansea, Jesus, I mean, what can you say about Swansea? They've lost their best player, their only player, it seems. They scraped a 0-0 draw against Southampton last week. I just can't see how they can stop Man United here. That bet you outlined earlier on there, Dave, the Man United to win both halves, 2-1. That looks a good bet to me, that. I mean, you might have to win in 90 minutes. We know how short that is. But 2-1, that's a fair price about something I can't see not happening, to be honest.
Yeah, 2-1 Manchester United to win both halves. One of the enhancements here with William Hill. And Joe, they did just scrape a 0-0 draw last week against Southampton. Only had 4 shots in the game, Swansea, which was the lowest total of shots in the first weekend of the Premier League season. None on target. Paul Clement will have to be a miracle worker, I think, to get a result here, given that they have lost Gylfi Sigurdsson, who is undoubtedly their best player. It's going to be interesting to see how the season progresses now for Swansea.
Yeah, it's going to be tough, and they've not got Llorente back after his injury over the summer as well, so it's going to be very, very difficult for Swansea, and that 1-3 for United to win is perfectly reflecting the fact that they will find this difficult. United were very good last week, but as everybody seems to be saying, was it a case, and as Dale said as well, was it a case of West Ham being terrible? I think it was a bit of both. Let's not forget that a week earlier, Manchester United looked pretty, pretty poor. Although it was against Real Madrid, they looked pretty poor. But Swansea are going to struggle. And actually, without wanting to jump on the Lukaku bandwagon, I've looked a little bit further back. Everybody's jumping on the Matic bandwagon. And hit the way that he plays obviously allows Pogba to get a little bit further forward. He got on the score sheet last week. Might be worth backing him to get on the score sheet again this week. So I've picked out 5-2 for Pogba to score any time and United to win.
That is a good point, that. Pogba, I think we'll see a lot of Pogba getting on the score sheet an awful lot more this season. He seemed to be shackled, didn't he? We mentioned it a few times, Dave, about, you know, wasn't sure what role he was supposed to be playing, it seemed to me, last season. So I think he's one of on the first goal scorer marks most weeks, to be honest. I've just been looking down at Swansea players, and I don't see anything there. I'm Jordan Ayew. And most of their foreigners, they seem unsuited to English football. But that, for Swansea, that's a step up, because most of their players are unsuited to football, generally. they just don't seem to have anybody that's going to put any fear, especially with Llorente sidelined at the moment. And Sigurdsson gone. I just don't see anything from Swansea. I think they're in for a real season of struggle.
Yeah, I agree.
Sigurdsson as well. I think over the last 3 years or something, he's the highest assists maker or provider in the Premier League, ahead of Ozil, ahead of all of those kind of guys. So they're actually losing not just a very good player, but where their goals come from. So I really do see them struggling this season.
Manchester United are 1-3 to win that match away at Swansea, who are 9-1. The draw 15-4. Do look at Lukaku to score in a Manchester United win. 6-5, that's an enhancement. And also Joe's bet there is Pogba to score in a Manchester United win, which is available at 5-2 here with William Hill. Saturday tea time, we've got Stoke versus Arsenal. And Stoke is 7-2 here with William Hill to win the game. The draw 11-4, Arsenal 3-4. Some of the enhancements on the website. Arsenal to win both halves again was 18-5, now 9-2. And Alexandre Lacazette to score and Arsenal to win happened last weekend against Leicester City. Will it happen again? It's 15-8 here, enhanced from 13-8. Joe, I've got this down as one of those games that in the past, you know, you think back 3 or 4 years, you'd have Stoke down to win this game at a big price. Toothless Arsenal have been in the past when travelling to Stoke, but this is a different Stoke side now, and they actually lost 11 of their 12 games against the eventual top six last season, and they started so slowly and poorly last year, having just picked up 3 points from an opening 21, a possible 21 at the start of the season. And on the back of that, Mark Hughes was pretty well backed to be first manager to go this season, Joe.
Yeah, he was. I think he was second favourite as the Premier League season kicked off. And it's quite interesting. When Tony Pulis left Stoke, obviously Stoke fans were desperate for a more attractive brand of football. And for a while it worked. And it now just looks like it's tailing off. They're losing some of the creative players as well. And like Swansea, I think Stoke are going to struggle this season. But Arsenal last week looked shambolic at the back. And I think there could be a few goals in this one. Obviously, Koscielny's banned. Holding was pretty poor last week. He needs an aged head next to him to kind of keep him on the... keep his head in the game. And I think at one point last week, Arsenal were playing in that back three. They were playing two fullbacks and one centre-half. So defensively, not great. Both teams to score 4-6 is a great price as well.
4-6 on both teams to score. Derek, just to pick up on something I made mention of just before we spoke to Joe there, this is the sort of game you'd think in the past Stoke would win, but now you're just not quite as sure.
No, well, it was the kind of game that you look at and you think Stoke will rough up Arsenal. But Stoke couldn't rough up Mothercare now. They don't seem to have those players anymore. In fact, I honestly don't see a pattern in Stoke. I don't see what they're trying to do. That signing of Sardo Berahino, it's still one of those that I'm scratching my head about, because every time I look at him, he seems to wear the look of a terror-struck female babysitter in a slasher movie. And it's not shared by Stoke fans whenever they see him warming up. I mean, now that guy is still getting paid Premier League wages, when I can't remember him doing a thing for three seasons other than, you know, create their own kind of headlines. The good news for Arsenal in this game is that bookies think they'll win. They make them strong favourites. The bad news for Arsenal is that I think they'll win too. I mean, I can't see them not beating Stoke, because I don't think Stoke will go down, but I can't see them finishing higher than 15th either. Remember those days when he used to finish 8th, 9th, 10th? Those days are gone now. Mm. I think Mark Hughes seems at the end of the tether. He seems to be a manager who's been at a club just too long. And I think Arsenal will win this. But I wouldn't put anybody off Joe's bet either. It does seem to... Arsenal look as though they'll concede, but they'll just score more than Stoke.
Yeah, if you do fancy both teams to score in the match, it is 13-20. You can have a look at Arsenal to win and both teams to score, which looks a reasonable option as well here with William Hill at 5-2 for Arsenal to win the game, but both teams to score. And to go back on something you were saying, Derek, Stoke finished outside the top half for the first time in 5 years last season, and things, Joe, are going to be tough for Mark Hughes this season, because... They've lost Marko Arnautović, which hasn't really been fully publicised, but he was on occasion talismanic for them. And I know he didn't start well for West Ham last week, but he's going to be a big loss as the season goes on.
Who was that? I'm sorry.
Marko Arnautović.
Yeah. He's one of those players where he's a 4 or 5 three times out of four, and then he'll have a 9 or a 10 out of 10 game. Mm. Every so often, and he was the main creative influence and almost the linchpin to the way that Stoke played with their, in inverted commas, new attractive brand of football. And I just think, with him gone, who's going to step into the void? I mean, they brought in Hesse this week. He failed to deliver it at PSG and was shipped out on loan to I think it was Las Palmas last season and didn't really do too much there. Is he going to be a replacement for Arnautovic? I don't think so. Bojan, Stoke got rid of him last season, sent him out on loan. Is he going to come back into the fold? There's a lot of flaky players, I think, at Stoke, and that they do need somebody like Arnautovic who would... He was a bit of a dirty chap, wasn't he?
I think he still is.
To pick my words carefully. But he was... He'd leave a foot in. He'd make sure you knew that he was there. And I can't see anybody in that Stoke forward line now really striking fear into any defence in the Premier League.
Yeah, it's like they're Arsenal light now, aren't they, Stoke, basically?
Yeah.
Huddersfield versus Newcastle next up then. Sunday 1:30. This one's televised as well. Huddersfield 7-5 to win the match. The draw 21-10 with Newcastle in the betting at 21-10 as well. Steve Mooney, who scored twice last week, him to score in a Huddersfield win, was 3-1, now 7-2. If you're favouring Newcastle here, enhanced odds, Newcastle to score in both halves was 15-4. That's been enhanced to 5-1. Amazing start, Derek, for Huddersfield. Took advantage of Frank de Boer's Crystal Palace, who are maybe taking time to adjust to the Dutchman's new system now. But Mooney ran riot, scored twice in a 3-0 win, and I was stunned, in all honesty, Derek. Huddersfield picking up 3 points on the opening day of the season.
It was incredible, but let's not forget that Hull did the same on the opening day last season. They beat the champions, Leicester, and look what happened to them. So I'm not getting carried away by a victory at Palace. Most teams win there, apart from Palace. In a month's time, I'm convinced people will be saying that Huddersfield are too good to go down. But I remember we were all saying the same thing in the past about West Ham, about Leeds, and about Tolisa. I think they will go down. I'm pretty sure they will. It was a great performance, but Palace are awful. I mean, the manager, De Boer, is saying he wants them to get to play like, you know, the Ajax way. I think he'll be getting to play the Mr. Muscle way this week after that, because they were an absolute shambles. Newcastle, okay, it was a disappointing result for them last week. Opening day, St. James Park, blah-de-blah-de-blah. And they didn't really turn it on. And they're not going to be pulling up any trees, I don't think, this season. I'm convinced, though, that they've got the manager who will do things to them this season. I've got a sneaking outside fancy for Newcastle to win the FA Cup, by the way, which is amazing.
Have you?
Rafa Benitez in the FA Cup didn't really weren't ideal bedfellows when he was at Liverpool, but I've got a sneaking feeling that he knows what Newcastle fans want. But anyway, that's for the future. I think they're overpriced in this game. I think if you'd have got this last season in the Championship, you'd have been all over Newcastle. I think the bookies have overreacted too much to what happened last weekend. Newcastle are a strong bet for me, yeah.
21-10 Newcastle did win at the John Smith Stadium last season. By the way, Newcastle to win the FA Cup. 40-1 Newcastle to win the FA Cup. And if it wasn't, Joe, for a moment of madness from Jonjo Shelvey, last week, he's like the scarecrow, Jonjo Shelvey. He needs to visit the wizard, because last weekend again, just selfish really from Jonjo Shelvey, put his team in trouble. Up to that point, they weren't the better of the two sides, but they looked comfortable, Joe.
They did. They looked comfortable. And I mean, it didn't make for a great spectacle, did it? It was perhaps, up until the red card, it was the most boring game of the Premier League weekend, in my opinion. The red card really unsettled, and it made Newcastle lose the balance that they had. They were dealing perfectly with Spurs all over the pitch, and it really messed things up, and it was a stupid red card. And I have to agree with Dell again. They were solid until the red card, and actually, Palace last week will have been surprised by Huddersfield's high pressing at the gegenpress that's played obviously by Liverpool and by Huddersfield. But Newcastle will be used to it because they played them twice last season. Crystal Palace not so much, and so I'm going for Newcastle as well, actually, in this game.
Newcastle are 21-10 to win the game for both Joe and Derek. What's the Gegen press? Is that the same as the trouser press, Joe? What's that?
Let's say
it is that intense style that they've adopted, Huddersfield and Liverpool.
Yeah.
It's just Liverpool couldn't continue that throughout the season, though, Joe. And Liverpool have got a much superior squad to Huddersfield. I just wonder whether it's going to take its toll maybe later on in the season for Huddersfield.
You saw that it did last season in the Championship. They performed fantastically in the first half of the season, and then over the busy Christmas period and heading into winter, they started to lose quite a lot of games, and they actually dropped out of the playoffs, if I remember correctly, around about February, March time. And then when other teams started to get tired as well, it then became more effective towards the end of the season, and that's how they got themselves back into the playoffs. It is going to be draining on the players, and they, as you say, don't have the squad that Liverpool do. So it's just a case of trying to get as many points on the board as early as possible, I think, for Huddersfield. And doing almost like, not like Blackpool did because they went down, but Blackpool had a fantastic start to the season, or like Hull under Phil Brown. They had a great start to the season, top half at Christmas, and then that gave them the breathing room to just about stay in the Premier League. And I think that's what Huddersfield are going to have to do. They're going to have to go hard for this first half of the season.
If you're looking for a goal scorer in this game as well, why not look at Dwight Gayle? He's scored in all three of his previous games in the league against Huddersfield Town, and scored in both matches last season in this meeting in the Championship. He is 21-10, Dwight Gayle, to score anytime if you fancy that. On to the big one then this weekend, 4 p.m. kickoff on Sunday, Tottenham versus Chelsea at White Hart Lane. Spurs are 21-20 to win this match. The draw 12-5, Chelsea in the betting at 13-5. As of all the Premier League games this weekend, hashtag your odds so you can tweet your bet to @WilliamHill, and the traders will price it up and put it on the William Hill website. There's already loads of hashtag your odds bets available on the website and on the app as well. Couple of enhancements: Harry Kane to score and Spurs to win was 19-10, now 9-4. And if you think Alvaro Morata's going to score and Chelsea are going to win, that was 9-2. That's been enhanced to 6-1. And Joe, in this game, I'm intrigued as how the match would be priced if it had been played at White Hart Lane rather than Wembley, because in my opinion, it's been priced up as if this game is just your archetypal home game for Spurs. They'd be about 21-20, I think, to beat Chelsea at White Hart Lane.
Yeah, I reckon so. And everybody knows that Spurs don't have the best of recent records at Wembley. I think, almost like in the Huddersfield-Newcastle game, I think there's been a bit of an overreaction after last week's games. Chelsea certainly can't be as bad as they were last weekend, and they've actually got quite a decent record at New Wembley. Obviously, both teams were affected by red cards. Spurs benefited from a red card for Jonjo Shelvey. Chelsea obviously got a very early red card for Gary Cahill, and then a later one for Cesc Fabregas. So we haven't really learned much about both teams. I think Chelsea are overpriced for this game. It is, I think, certainly for the first few games for Spurs as they get used to playing at Wembley. Obviously, when they were playing there in the Champions League, they were playing all of their home games in the Premier League at White Hart Lane and then playing the occasional game at Wembley. So it almost was like a one-off cup final every single time that they played there. So the nerves would be ramped up. So I do think that this should be priced up as a neutral fixture for the first few games, at least. And at 13-5, Chelsea do look very overpriced to me. The only issue is they are going to be depleted by those suspensions.
They are. Cahill out. Eden Hazard, I don't think, will feature in this match either. Pedro still recovering as well. So they are slightly depleted from a squad perspective. As far as the recent history in this fixture is concerned, Chelsea have a good record as well. They've only lost two of their last 17 in all competitions against Spurs. And even though Spurs have won 14 consecutive home games in the Premier League, does that even matter now, Derek, now they're at Wembley?
No, it doesn't. You're right about the prices. They wouldn't be any shorter than that at White Hart Lane. I can't believe the odds, to be honest, in this game. You know, every day my mate rings me up, Dave, to tell me he's found the bet of the century. But every day he reverses the charges to do so. Well, he's big on Spurs this weekend, and I'll tell you what that means. I'll be lending him my money come Sunday night because Spurs are criminally underpriced. You mentioned that this should be priced up as a neutral ground, as a neutral match on neutral territory, like the cup final or the charity shield. Sorry, the community shield. Chelsea were something like 6-5 to win that game against Arsenal. Okay, they didn't win it, but it was 6-5. But 13-5 here. That's a massive price. You know, for the champions on neutral territory are 13-5 to win. Now, I know they haven't got Hazard and they're half the side without him. And I know they've got a few other injury problems and suspensions and so on. But, you know, this is Spurs. They're no world beaters. They're a very, very solid side, Spurs, but had a huge disadvantage this season. No home matches. The prices are totally wrong. And again, you're right, Joe. I can't believe I'm agreeing with him so much this week. It has been an overreaction, like the Huddersfield game. Chelsea are screaming out to be back. I don't think Chelsea will have a good season, far from it. But as a punter, as a value punter, there's only one bet you can have here.
You agreeing with a bookmakers representative as well, Derek. Bookmakers have made their living, by the way, disagreeing with you. So, I mean, this is disconcerting for William Hill, I think, here.
All my years at the Racing Post, I was a sucker for people like Joe and the information they fed me and the press releases they fed me. So I'm following suit there. Old habits die hard.
By the way, it wouldn't be a London derby with Spurs involved without me mentioning this stat, which comes from Opta, as most of the stats on this podcast do. Harry Kane has scored 18 goals in 21 Premier League London derbies since he got two against Chelsea back on New Year's Day in 2015. Harry Kane, just a shade of odds against to score in this game. 21-20 for Harry Kane to get on the score sheet. And the weekend finishes with a trip to the Etihad, Manchester City versus Everton. And City are 1-3 to win this one. The draw 4-1, Everton 8-1. Enhanced odds, Sergio Aguero to score and Man City to win was 10-11. That's been enhanced to 11-10. And Wayne Rooney to score and Everton to win was 14-1. That's been enhanced to a 16-1. And Manchester City unbeaten in 6 Premier League home matches against Everton, winning 3 and drawing 3 in that spell. And one thing is for certain, City are going to have tons of possession in this match. And I thought, Derek, watching last week's game, Gabriel Jesus didn't get on the score sheet, but was absolutely superb. He's going to have some season, I think, Jesus.
Yeah, he's the real deal, without question. We only saw him fleetingly last game, but what a talent he looks. I mean, you can't quibble about him. I don't think there's anybody in the country who think he won't be a proper player. So City have signed a gem there. And they've got rid of, I mean, it's not a controlled man yet he had anymore, is it? They've got rid of most of the oldies. Yeah, Torre apart. And they're not a young squad, don't get me wrong. But I've heard their win bonus is a whole day of face painting this weekend. But he's revolutionised the side, hasn't he, Guardiola? I've still got my doubts about the way he wants to play. I love the way he wants to play. I'm not sure that some of the players, well, maybe the new signings will help, but they always look an accident waiting to happen when they were playing out from the back last season. And you never, you know, let's just see that might well happen again in the early stages. I mean, they look great. You know, you look on paper and there's talent everywhere, and you think, you know, if you had to name the champions now, you'd go for Man City. But Everton aren't a bad team. They've got a good record at the Etihad. I mean, you mentioned the 3 draws and 3 defeats there in the last 6. But further ago than that, I think they had about 3 wins on the spin.
Yeah, I think they had 4, Derek. I think they had 4 wins on the spin at City.
That's right, yeah. I mean, it's not a place you go to and crumble. And there's something, you know, there's something about Everton under Koeman this time around. I just think an 8-1. It's a bit big, isn't it? I just think it's a bit big. Yeah. Especially early in the season when you are going to get result that raised the eyebrows more so than when the form has settled down. I'm going to give Everton a go here at 8-1. I just think it's too big against the City side that do look fantastic when things are going right, but they are capable of throwing in howl as we saw it so often last term.
Everton 8-1, the selection for Derek. Speculative pick from Mr. McGovern there. An Everton fan, by the way, said to me pre-season, Joe, that they hadn't signed the real Wayne Rooney. They'd signed an imposter, a fat man in a Wayne Rooney suit. That might need to be revised slightly now, because I was man of the match last week in that 1-0 win to kickstart the season. And I didn't see the game midweek against Hajduk Split, but reportedly was one of the star men on that occasion as well. We could have back to the old Wayne Rooney maybe here.
Yeah, do you know what? I was very cynical when he moved. I thought it was a nostalgic move, maybe a face in the dressing room to help some of these very talented young players that Everton have come through and develop. But he was the best player, arguably, on the pitch last week. He played very well in midweek in the Europa League. Do you know what? We priced up the other day the price of him to get on the plane, the 23-man squad for the World Cup at the end of the season. And he's 2-1. Now, when he was at Manchester United, it seemed like he was running his contract down. He was going to go to China for a big money move, or the States for a big money move. He obviously thought that he could do it or continue to do it in the Premier League. When he was at United, he was all the way out at 7-1 to make the World Cup. I think regular playing time, the fact that Koeman's probably put an arm around him, whereas Mourinho, he spent the first half of last season trying to fit him in the team somewhere, and when it didn't work, left him on the bench and he didn't play for half a season. And then when he did come on, he looked a shadow of his former self. I think regular playing time and an arm around his shoulder, I think Wayne Rooney could be, perhaps, given the fact that he signed for peanuts, I think he could be one of the signings of the summer.
What do you think to this game? Are you with or against Mr. McGovern?
I'm going to have to oppose him this time.
I really,
as good as I think Everton are, and as well as I think they have signed this summer, Manchester City look very good. They looked very good last week against Brighton, who essentially just wanted to stick men behind the ball and just try and frustrate City for as long as possible. I like the fact that City are playing both Jesus, he's from Brazil, they're playing Jesus and Aguero. So you've got the double threat of two genuinely world-class strikers up top.
Yeah.
And obviously Everton played in the Europa League as well, so City will be a little fresher, although they did play that bizarre friendly against, was it Girona, on Monday?
Yeah, it was strange, that, wasn't it?
Very strange. Although it was, I think it was Yaya Toure, Raheem Sterling and a load of kids. But regardless, I do think there's goals in this game. I think both teams will score, which is even money. The bet that I've picked out, City to win and 5 or more goals.
Wow.
I reckon we could have a 4-1, a 4-2. I know Monday Night Football never usually brings out the best matches, but I think we could have a 4-2, a 5-2 or something like that. I think there's goals in this game.
Okay. Manchester City to win and 5 or more. Have you got a price on that, Joe?
Yeah, 4-1.
4-1, Manchester City to win and 5 or more goals in the game on the William Hill website. Here's a bit of trivia for you as well. Sergio Aguero he's not got a great record against Everton, but he needs one more goal to become the all-time highest ever non-European goal scorer in the Premier League. Who is he currently level with? That's a bit of trivia. And Derek, do you know?
Non-European goals.
Yeah, he's currently level. Premier League history. Highest all-time non-European goal scorer.
You're going to have to give us a clue.
I think I've got it.
Oh, you think you've got it? Well, hold fire 1 second. We're going to get the best of the rest and the naps from the chaps very shortly. But Lee Phelps has done some sort of ditty here, which I'm hearing for the first time. So if it's no good, listeners, I'll cut it out later. But here's Mr. Lee Phelps.
So because my tips are no longer good enough for the weekend punt, fair call, I decided to write a little ditty instead. We've got 9 more months of great scorers and savers, divers and divas, Twitter ranters and ravers, deniers and blamers, big winners and losers. Derek. Whether you follow the Champions League cravers or mediocre mid-tablers, this great game is better to us than Grand Slams and majors because it shapes us and our cultural behaviours. Welcome back, the Premier League.
What do you think? Should I leave that in or cut it out, Derek?
Bring back Tamez.
That brought a tear to my eye. It was like one of those old Hovis adverts. whimsical.
He remembers those. He loves that Werther's original advert, Lee Phelps, as well. There was a nasty pop at you, though, in there, Derek.
Yes, I know. So I cut that bit out, but the rest is okay.
Go on then, Joe. Give us the answer to that trivia question.
Is it Drogba?
Oh, it's not Drogba.
Oh,
not Didier
no.
Drogba. I will reveal it towards the end of the podcast then. Joe and Derek have missed out there. So Aguero needs one more. A goal to become the all-time highest ever non-European goal scorer in Premier League history. He's currently level with someone, but who is it? I'll let you know at the end of the podcast. Best of the rest then, chaps. We've been through the televised games. What's catching your eye, Joe, away from the TV matches?
Del will probably like to hear this, but Liverpool, they're not a punter's price at 4-11, but there's plenty of value to be found if you have a look at some of the enhanced odds. You've got 11-8, Mane to score and Liverpool to win. I just think that the way that Crystal Palace are trying to play is not going to hurt Liverpool. Liverpool were hurt by balls into the box, set pieces. And Crystal Palace are going to try and play it around, and Liverpool should, if they do, easily be able to counter and beat them comfortably.
Okay, Liverpool looking good for Joe. What's catching your eye, Mr. McGovern?
Same game, different team. I always back Palace away from home at big prices, always, and they always. I'm all generally rewarded. They're a team that love to play on the counter attack. They're the kind of team that Liverpool hate playing. They've been to Anfield the last three seasons and won all three times, which is a quite incredible record. It's a terrible record, terrible Eagles record for Liverpool. Worst Eagles record in life in the fast lane. But I just can't see why Palace are so big. Now they might be a different team now under De Boer. They might play it a little bit differently. But over the last four or five seasons, backing them away from home at big prices, you wouldn't have gone far wrong. So I'm going to do the same again this weekend.
Okay. The game that I quite like the look of is Southampton versus West Ham. I think Southampton are underpriced here, and West Ham, I think, are set up to play away from home with their squad this season. And there was a lot of optimism behind West Ham coming into this new season, but that seems to have quickly dissipated after the thumping they got at Old Trafford last week. But I think they might bounce back, and they're just under 4-1 to do so, which I quite like at 19-5 for the Hammers.
That's a big price, isn't it?
Southampton haven't scored in, I know we've only had one game this season, but they're on a club streak of, I think, six games without scoring a goal in the Premier League. So while Gabbiadini came in and started firing the goals in January, the goals really have dried up for Saints as well.
Yeah, so 19-5 for West Ham. Let's finish with the Naps then. Best bets this week. I'm going to go with West Ham at 19-5 because I quite like the price on the Hammers. I suppose you chaps are going to be battling it out for a bet in the Liverpool Crystal Palace game. So Joe, I'll let you go first.
Well, nap of the day. I think I did just mention it then. Mane to score in a Liverpool victory.
Mane to score in a Liverpool win is
11-8 from 5-4. Yeah,
the bet for Joe in the enhancement. And Derek,
I'm going for Chelsea to beat Tottenham at Wembley.
Chelsea to win at Spurs 13-5 here with William Hill. And if you fancy that, you need to take the enhancement out of the treble. But Sadio Mane to score and Liverpool to win 11-8 is Joe's bet. West Ham at 19-5 is my pick, and Chelsea at 13-5 is Derek's pick this weekend. Joe, thank you for your company.
Thank you very much for having me.
Now at William Hill, you can get your bet onto the website for featured matches. If there's a bet you fancy that's not on the app, just tweet with the hashtag #YourOdds to @WilliamHill, and the traders will try to price it up. Hashtag #YourOdds from William Hill.
Now, just before we speak to Neil Ashton from The Sun, let's get the thoughts of Sam Norris on the European action this weekend.
It's another foray into French Ligue 1 for me this weekend, and again I'm keen to back Lyon on Saturday. They've shown so far that there is life without Alexandre Lacazette after thumping Strasbourg 4-0 on the opening day. They followed that up by beating Rennes 2-1 away from home last time out, and Mariano Diaz has been the man tasked with filling that Lacazette-shaped hole in Lyon's attack, and the former Madrid man has already helped himself to 3 goals in those 2 games, so he could be worth a look anytime at 19-20. But I do think Lyon can maintain their 100% start to the season against a Bordeaux side that don't travel all that well. Just the 1 win from their last 7 away games for Bordeaux, although that doesn't tell the full story, as they have at least managed to get on the score sheet in 10 of their last 11 road trips, and they may do so again this weekend. Lyon's home form is generally pretty good. They've collected maximum points in 9 of their last 13 on home soil, so backing Lyon to win and both teams to score could be the answer here. And that's available at a very reasonable 2-1.
Okay, now it's time to get stuck into the Football Writers Association part of the podcast, and I'm delighted to be joined by the host of the Sunday Supplement on Sky Sports and the chief football reporter at the Sun newspaper. It is Neil Ashton who's on the line right now. First of all, good afternoon to you, Neil. Welcome along.
Thanks very much. How are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. I suppose the big burning question after week one is Chelsea's title defence already over? It seems absurd to think that it could be after week one, but we've seen historically in the Premier League it's so difficult to retain the title. I think the last team to do it was Manchester United back in 2008-2009, and we're clearly in this situation with Chelsea where there's discontent in the dressing room. Antonio Conte has lost Diego Costa. Diego Costa doesn't want to play for Chelsea. Chelsea don't want Diego Costa. And they were hammered by Burnley last weekend.
They were. It was 3-2 in the end because they got a couple of goals back, but they were 3-0 down at one point in that game and only had 9 men after Cesc Fabregas and Gary Cahill were sent off. I think to retain the title, you have to want to retain the title, and you have to have a mood about the club that says that they want to keep that title, they want to win it again. And I just don't sense that, doesn't feel that way, that they've got this relentless, ruthless streak that perhaps we saw under Sir Alex Ferguson's Manchester United sides in the past. The setup just doesn't feel quite right. And when you go down to 10 men so early on in the game with Cahill sent off, and of course Fabregas, without Diego Costa, their leading scorer last season, 20 goals in the Premier League, a huge asset. On the field when he's committed, when he's focused, when his head is right. But of course, when you've got a guy over in Brazil saying, I'm not coming back. I'm not coming back to train. I don't want to play. You've told me to leave. Let me leave. Let me go to Atletico Madrid. When you throw all those different things into the equation, then of course the atmosphere at the club, it can't be healthy. It isn't healthy, which is why it manifested itself in last week's defeat at home to Burnley. In terms of their title chances, it's one game, but you can't afford to lose at home to Burnley. Not when lights of Manchester City, Manchester United got off to such a great start. Arsenal the night before on the Friday against Leicester already. You're having to make up ground after one game of the Premier League season.
They've drifted out from 7-2 to 6-1 to win the title. Derek's still on the line with us as well. Derek, I mean, Diego Costa did that interview with the Daily Mail, who arrived on his doorstep in Brazil, and he's accused Chelsea of treating him like a criminal and has refused to rule out legal action. There's certainly some disruption at the early part of Chelsea's season.
Well, it hasn't looked a happy ship for a while. Even when they were celebrating last season, you got the hint that, you know, something wasn't quite right at Stamford Bridge. And it's just gone from, they've had a summer of discontent. All the people I feel most sorry for are Chelsea fans. They've got absolutely no idea who to support next now. It's terrible for them. I don't know, it's Conte. Conte's at the root of the problems. I mean, this is a team that's just won the league in a canter. And yet, you know, we've been making noises of this, sending out distress signals for months now. They've signed players for big money. I think the only problem they've got, Chelsea, right now is the absence of Eden Hazard, because he's the guy that makes them tick, and without him, they're only, you know, 75% of the side they can be. Is their title challenge over already? Well, I thought it was over before the season began, to be honest. I didn't think they'd strengthened enough, and I thought luck was with them in last season. They didn't really get a challenge from anybody. I didn't think they'd be strong enough this season. I'm not saying one game the title challenge is over, but I've never had them down as title winners this season anyway.
Has Costa made a misstep in his treatment of Diego Costa, in your opinion, Neil?
Well, you've indulged your best players at times, but of course he's so difficult. He's got diva-like tendencies, and we've seen that over the last 3 years, ever since Jose Mourinho signed him in 2015 from Atletico Madrid. But losing him, when you haven't signed players to replace him, when you haven't got the quality in front of goal, and I know that a lot is being expected of Morata, scored last weekend, of course, against Burnley, but hasn't settled into life in England and the rhythm of Premier League football yet, because he's only played a very, very brief moment as a substitute for Chelsea and also in the Community Shield, of course, as well. But you can't spend your life persuading players to stay with a football club. It's tedious and it must be tiring for managers to keep having to do that, particularly when it's the same player. And Costa has asked to get away from Chelsea a number of times. They should have just done this early on in the summer. The moment Conte made the sort of sent that fatal text to him, that is the moment Chelsea, although they're disappointed their manager doing that, that's the moment that Chelsea should have just done it. Got to the table with Atletico Madrid, sold him, and then moved on, because he's dragged into the start of the season, and it's cast a shadow of the club. And when that happens, we know what happens at Chelsea. It's a combustible, volatile environment, and we're seeing that every single day at the moment.
Where do you think they'll finish, Chelsea, Neil?
Top four, because they'll resolve the difficulties that they have, and also some of the other clubs. Everton, of course, Europa League. They've got big commitments in that. The fixture list is heavy. It's congested. Liverpool playing in the Champions League as well, so I'd expect them to come through the game in the second leg against Hoffenheim. Then they're into the group stages. The draw, of course, is next week. And although Chelsea are back in the Champions League, they're a side and a squad that is equipped to deal with playing in Europe in midweek and then playing back in the Premier League, whereas I think that their rivals, including Arsenal in the Europa League as well, even though they'll change their players for the Europa League games and play a younger squad, I still think that it will affect those clubs to enough for Chelsea to be able to finish in the top four. But it feels, as things stand, as though it's likely to be nearer fourth than first.
Yes, indeed. The other breaking story this week was that there's a proposal to change the transfer window, and the transfer window will end when the Premier League season commences. And Derek, this is something that you've thought would be a factor for some years, or would be a positive implementation if this happened.
Yeah, well, I've been saying it for years, and finally the Premier League have listened to me. I'm glad to see. I mean, who was it in the first place that allowed it to go to the end of August anyway? It was just some date plucked out of thin air that was going to discomfort the clubs most, because that's what the case is. The new proposals make it a hell of a lot of sense, you know, before the season kicks off, because there's so much uncertainty. You're like, from a punting point of view, it's like I'm a celebrity, get me out of here. You can't have a serious bet until the two additions have been parachuted in, usually screaming. Well, you can't have a bet on the Premier League until the new additions have come in, usually laughing all the way to the bank. It's like a phony war until the end of August, and then you see what squads are available, and then you can have a serious bet, and then the real season begins. The only thing I would say about the new proposals, it's only for England, and so if they were to stop it, you know, when the season started, and allowed other clubs in Europe, the Barcelonas and so forth, to cherry-pick the best players from England, I can't see that being a better state of affairs than it is now. So I think it's got to be an international agreement that it all finishes on the same date, i.e. probably the beginning of August. Why not? Why not the beginning of August?
That seems a big factor, Neil, doesn't it? Because it's only English clubs talking about this. And as with every single issue that affects the Premier League, 14 clubs need to vote in favour before any change is made. And it's a good point that Derek makes as well, because, for instance, if Philippe Coutinho is poached, Liverpool at this moment have the opportunity to try and replace him, even though he could be irreplaceable, Philippe Coutinho. If this change was made, they wouldn't have the opportunity to do that, Liverpool.
No, they wouldn't, but then they wouldn't sell him, would they? Because the riches on offer in the Premier League, from commercial revenue, television revenue, and everything else that goes on alongside it, the business decision would be, look, it doesn't matter how much money Barcelona or whoever offer for Philippe Coutinho, if you can't replace him, then it's as simple as you just can't sell him. He's not in a position to be able to do that. You just have to keep him. The benefit at the moment of that window for clubs, certainly in the lower reaches of the Premier League, certainly anybody outside the top six, is that if you get off to a bad start, if after three games you haven't got a point on the board, you have got an opportunity to change your squad before the end of September, so you've played three Premier League games, say, this season, haven't got a point on the board. You can make decisions, you can make transfers. That's the only real significant benefit that I can see. That's the only advantage of having that window open for the first few games of a Premier League season. Eric's absolutely right in terms of the synchronisation with the rest of Europe. That, of course, it has to be around the same time just to allow player trading between the leagues to go on, because English clubs won't sell their players beyond the end of the window to European clubs if they can't replace them. And that's something that needs to be resolved by talking to the big European leagues, Italy, Germany and Spain.
It seems like it's a long way off this, Neil. Would you be in principle in favour of this?
Well, this year certainly, because of where I just feel the fans are being cheated out of seeing Ross Barkley, okay, I know he's injured now, Gylfi Sigurdsson, Alexis Sanchez, Philippe Coutinho. You've got a whole list of superstar names, big names with huge profiles, with commanding huge transfer fees and attention, that people supportive of those clubs are not seeing play for their club because of a variety of minor muscular tears and injuries, which in my mind translates as they're waiting for the transfer window. And I don't think that's fair on the support of the clubs. When they buy their season tickets, when they pay their ticket prices, when they want to see their team, when they make a commitment to watch their club play, they also expect to see their star names in the team, and they're not seeing them for the first 3 weeks of the season.
Neil, are you at a match this weekend?
I am. I'm actually off to Wembley, so I'm going to remember to go to Wembley, because I know at some point a journalist this season is going to drive to White Hart Lane to see Tottenham playing and realise actually they're in the wrong place. But this weekend I'm going to Wembley. I'm going to see their first home game in the Premier League against Chelsea. A massive game. Huge, great start for Tottenham last weekend at Newcastle. Dele Alli off to a flying start in the Premier League with his goal. And, of course, Chelsea, they need to silence a few people who are already starting to doubt them. One of them, I guess, is me already.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's going to have a different feel, isn't it, at Wembley, I think. I mean, it is Tottenham's new home, but it remains to be seen whether it's going to feel like that this week.
Well, you've got to make it home. That's the thing. They've left White Hart Lane behind their new stadium. They've got something to look forward to next season. There's a huge amount of optimism and enthusiasm around the club. I know they've had their issues with selling Kyle Walker in the summer. Of course, Danny Rose and his voluble sort of comments a couple of weeks ago. But at the same time, this is one of the best teams in the Premier League to watch. And they have to adapt to playing at Wembley. They've beaten Juventus in a pre-season friendly. I think that was 3-0 at Wembley Stadium. So when you're capable of doing that, when you can beat a team that reaches a Champions League final, when you're good enough to do that, then you should be able to settle into life at Wembley. And it's one season. It's one season at the home of football. Fantastic stadium to play in. 19 Premier League games. They've got the Champions League to look forward to as well. You know, what's not to look forward to at Tottenham? That's the thing. Is there's been a difficulty in the past winning games there, but they have to put that to one side. They have to refocus. Mentality has to be right, and I'm sure they'll be fine.
Neil, enjoy that game at Wembley. Thank you for joining us on the podcast.
Thanks very much. Pleasure. Anytime.
Thank you to Neil Ashton and, of course, to Derek McGovern for their thoughts ahead of the Premier League football this weekend. We're going to drop one rung down the ladder now and hear from Pete Farries ahead of the Championship.
So last week I opposed Barnsley for my nap of the week. This week I'm with them. They're 7-2 away at Sheffield United, and my nap is going to be plus a goal Barnsley at 11-10. Why? Well, Barnsley have been conceding and have continued to concede a lot of goals, but they got a massive midweek win against an impressive starting Nottingham Forest, and they do appear to have at least got some confidence back. Their opponents this weekend are Sheffield United. Now, United had gone over, 17-18 games unbeaten before losing unfairly to Middlesbrough. They then lost midweek against Cardiff, and while Cardiff and Borough are both much better sides than Barnsley, I actually think this could go in the tight's favour. Why? Well, simply put, once you go on a massive unbeaten run, and it comes to an abrupt, and in the Borough case, unfair end, then it's very, very hard to quickly pull your socks back up. So I'm not going to play Barnsley on the outrights here. I'm going to give myself the option of the draw as well. My nap of the week this week is Barnsley plus a goal at 11-10.
Aha, the Naps table then, folks. How have things progressed over the first 2 weeks? I had a winner last week, Sergio Aguero, doing the business, scoring any time at 5-6. That puts me at the top of the Naps table at the moment, plus £8.33. Pete Farris, good selection, Ipswich, at 17-10 last week. He's plus 7. Al Ross had a loser last week, but won first week. He's plus £6.25. And the only other person in profit on the Naps table, the European football duo of Sam Norris and Alex Dunn. They are plus 50 pence, not quite enough for a chocolate bar just yet. Marseille, the winning selection last week at 21-20. I won't mention Gav's Nap, but they got beat 4-1, Bristol Rovers. Oops. So he stands at minus 20, and he has broad shoulders at the moment, holding everyone up at the bottom of the Naps table. Let's hope there's better to come from Gav. I'm sure there is. We'll hear from him and Al now.
So my League One Nap selection this weekend, very tempted with Oxford away at Scunthorpe. Oxford going great gun, 17-10 is very tempting. Bradford at home to Blackburn, avoiding Blackburn like the plague at the moment. I think Bradford look solid in this War of the Roses at 23-20. But my Nap selection is a side who were walloped 5-0 last weekend. That's Southend at home to Plymouth. Southend went to South Yorkshire, got beat 5-0 by Rotherham. They'll be smarting from that and wanting to put it to bed with a result at home to Plymouth. And Southend will always be at their strongest at Roots Hall. And they're 21-20 against the Plymouth side who registered a good victory against Charlton last week at home, but still getting to grips with League One on the road. They lost to Peterborough 2-1 opening day of the season, and in the League Cup got walloped 5-0 at Bristol City. So they are conceding goals on the road, Plymouth. I think this will be over 2.5 goals, but I do fancy Southend at 21-20 to beat Plymouth.
ACCA 5 is William Hill's new ACCA insurance. It means if you have a 5 selection accumulator and one lets you down, you'll get your money back as a free bet. And it's available across all sports. ACCA 5, exclusive to William Hill. T's and C's apply.
This week's Nap, the home side in the fixture between Accrington and Mansfield. Mansfield were the pre-season league favourites, but they have changed an awful lot, and I think too much. 13 new arrivals, 12 departures. I'm not surprised they beat Forest Green last week, because Forest Green fall into that same category as not really having impressed or gelled so far. Accrington Stanley, meanwhile, they have beaten Colchester and they have beaten Championship Preston on their own patch already this season. New striker Caden Jackson has 3 goals in their 3 games, among the 8 goals the team have scored already. And their home form across 2017 has been superb. In all competitions, 10 wins, 5 draws, 1 defeat. And that defeat to playoff chasing Luton in the final home game last season. You can't really oppose Accrington at home, so 8-5 makes them this week's Nap. You've also got to go back 12 beatings for Mansfield's last win over Stanley, so head-to-head bettors will like this one as well. 8 Stanley wins and 3 draws in their last 11 meetings. For those who want to go deeper, 4 of the last 5, 6 of the last 8 meetings have seen both teams to score. That includes their last meeting, which was 4-4 at Mansfield in February. Both teams to score 8-11, but Accrington to win and both teams to score 4-1. On form, Caden Jackson and also Mansfield's Dangerman Billy Key are both 13-8 any time. If you want to push the boat out, Key to score for Mansfield, but Accrington to win, it's a whopping 12-1. If you're putting together an ACCA though, don't get greedy. The 8-5 on Accrington is fine.
Okay, that just about wraps us up for this week. Check out all the football betting at williamhill.com. Make sure you follow William Hill on Twitter for the latest odds and offers as well, at William Hill. And tell your friends as well. You can download this podcast via audioboom.com or via iTunes. It's been good to have you with us. And before you go, the man that is level with Sergio Aguero in the highest all-time non-European goal scorers in Premier League history, it is the former Manchester United striker Dwight York on 123 goals. Will Aguero break that record this week? We'll find out on Monday night. Thank you for listening to the podcast once again, and we'll speak next week.